Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. In the previous episode, I left off at Solid because I thought Solid's kind of a big deal. It's kind of a major library within the KDE frameworks, and I surmised that I might have a lot to say about it. I don't know that I do. I was trying to use Solid in some example code to sort of demonstrate some of the principles that Solid kind of provides you, and Kdevelop just kept crashing on me, unfortunately. I hate to say it, but that's just what was happening. And I eventually just got tired of fighting Kdevelop. I could have used something else, but Kdevelop was not happy. I was adding the system path to the system include path to CPP check, and after I did that, it really seemed to be unhappy with anything that I added as an include in the demo code, and eventually it just kind of stopped working, and I had to kill that PID, and then I had to restarted it and tried a different kind of template system, I just got tired of it. I just had to quit. I should have just started with Qt Creator, but I thought the smarter, more obvious thing would be to use Kdevelop, because, I mean, this is the KDE frameworks that we're talking about, so I don't know, I just thought it would be kind of all a natural fit, but Kdevelop, for some reason, isn't sort of preset to utilize. Well, I guess it makes sense because you're supposed to have your own development environment. Yeah, maybe that's part of the problem. I don't know. Seems like it doesn't want to use system paths, though, so I stopped trying that. And anyway, I don't know how useful demo code would have been. There are out-of-date tutorials online on KDE.org. You could look at them. They're vaguely interesting. And I think that the interesting thing about Solid, well, maybe I should back up for a moment and talk about what Solid is. So, Solid, it is a device integration framework. It provides a way of querying and interacting with hardware independent of the underlying operating system. This is the important part. So, when you're writing code for a number of platforms, right? You're just writing C++ code. You don't know what the user is going to try to run your code on. You just know that you're writing some code to, I don't know, let's say, take a photo. You want to do like one of those photo booth applications or passport applications where person looks at their camera, presses a button, or there's a countdown, takes a picture for them. Easy, right? In theory. Well, on Linux, one way to do that would be to query /dev. That's where the cameras live on Linux. So if you look in, you know, I'm just going to do an ls, so /dev/vid*, and it looks like I have two video devices attached to my system. I'm not sure that that's correct, but I've got a video 0 and a video 1. Video 1 of them, I know what that would be. It's the little webcam that I have on top of the monitor. But right now, I usually have two webcams because I test webcams for some applications that I work on. I see the other one. I know what it's seeing as a camera. That's not correct, but that's fine. So yeah, so I've got two devices that it's identifying as a video device, and one of them is correct. So if I sort of look there, /dev/video/dev, and then look for some video device, it's relatively easy to find it. And one of the ways that you can do that is you simply get a listing of that directory. You filter out everything starting with VIDEO, and then any number appended to it. And then you could enumerate those devices. You could say, okay, well, for every device that you find there, make an entry in a drop-down menu so that the user can choose between the devices that you found at, you know, in /dev. And then the user can go in and choose the camera that they want the application to use and run the application. And that's a perfectly valid way of doing it. The one problem with that, though, is that that doesn't work on Windows, certainly. There's no /dev on Windows, as far as I know. And if there is, it doesn't have video devices listed in it. And it doesn't work on Mac OS. There may be a /dev. I don't believe there is. I haven't looked recently, but I wouldn't imagine there would be a /dev. Whether there is or not, maybe there is, then there probably wouldn't be a video listing. And if there were, it would be restricted by something higher up the chain. Because Mac and Windows both are, you know, have a vested interest in locking down the hardware. They're very sort of afraid of people releasing software onto their platforms that, for instance, activate your camera without your knowledge, that sort of thing. And so a lot of times they have security systems governing whether something can just grab the camera and start manipulating it. And even beyond that, they just don't necessarily have the direct access. They don't provide direct access to peripheral devices. And the way that you are meant to access those things is through a software development kit or a library that they provide somewhere. AV kit is what it's called for Mac OS, at least last time I checked. Windows, I don't know, but there would be something, maybe NT something, NT device, I don't know. I'm just making things up. So you would have to then talk to those libraries to understand what kind of device you have hooked up to your system. Now, you can do that. You can do an OS check in your code and find out what operating system the user is running this application on or compiling it on, and then choose based on the response to either use this code or that code to ensure that the software that the person runs on their system kind of understands what library it needs to use. But another way to do it would just be to have a what they consider an abstraction layer, so that you as the programmer, all you have to do is make calls out to Solid. And Solid can help you navigate through the devices. How Solid gets that information is up to Solid. It's not something you have to worry about. Solid is designed so that if it is on one platform, it knows to use such and such a library, and if it's on another platform, then it knows to use some other library, and so on. So Solid's quite a convenience for programmers, because instead of having to consider at the very least 3 different methods of querying for hardware devices, the programmer only needs to know one, and that is go talk to Solid. Now, what does Solid actually provide the programmer? Well, it provides generally classes, C++ classes that sort of look at a device. They you know, it discovers that some number of video cameras are connected. Great. So you can query the Solid system to find out how many cameras are connected, and then for each one, you could tell it to, again, make an entry in a drop-down box, or a drop-down menu, or to find the one with the highest resolution and to default to that, or to manipulate it in some way, maybe to raise the gamma or you know, whatever. You have access to that device through Solid, through at least whatever level of control Solid offers for that device. And you only do that once. You do that once, or you know, you deal with exactly one thing, which is called Solid, regardless of what you're shipping to the user. And that's a huge time saver, not only for the act of programming the thing, but it's also a huge time saver when you're, you know, for the unpleasant surprises of what does and doesn't work. And believe me, I've used things without a layer of abstraction, and it's not fun. You get to debug the same block of code 3 times, once on Mac, once on Windows, once on Linux. It's not fun, especially since each one often has a slightly different, well, it has a drastically different interface that you might be talking to, and then a lot of times it has a slightly different maybe fix for a similar problem. I'm making up an example here, but let's say that you were talking to a camera in your code, and on Linux it comes out when it defaults to this, you know, one camera, the picture is very bright, but on Windows the picture is very dark. And so now you have to go back and figure out, okay, so here's how I talked to that camera in the first place on Windows. Now, how do I get to the controls where I can adjust the gamma? Do I have access to that? Does the user have to intervene to give my application permission to access that device? And once they do, what controls do I have access to? I'm making up examples here, but you get the idea. And then on Linux, it might be a completely different set of problems. It might be, well, okay, I've got the device. I'm finding that really easily because I have direct access to it, but I don't have control over the device because the device has some kind of special driver that it's not exposing to dev video 0 or dev video 1 or whatever, and so on. So Solid is a useful level of abstraction that can ideally take all of that stuff out of the developer's hands. They don't have to think about what subsystem they're using on their target platform. They just need to know that when they need a peripheral device, they can query Solid. And there's a bunch of different things that Solid sort of provides. You know, there's, like I say, there's a whole class list on api.kde.org/framework/solid. You can find a device list, or not a device list, a class list of everything that it provides. And there's lots of different categories. There's different interfaces. There's a battery. There's a device. There's a camera. There's a device manager, a device interface, a generic interface, a network share, an optical disk, optical drive, and on and on and on. So just a bunch of different kinds of things that you can imagine people connecting to their computers. And then within those, within each of those things, within each interface, it may provide a bunch of other functions so that you can, I don't know, you know, query for a vendor ID or a product ID, or maybe in some cases some nominal kinds of controls that you can adjust and that sort of thing. So really useful for developers, and ultimately better for users. How do they do it? I don't know. I mean, it's really, really impressive, and that's kind of why I thought I might have a lot to say about Solid. I guess I have said something about Solid, but I think this is the kind of thing, and I've said this before about KDE, I guess, but I mean, this is some amazing stuff. I mean, this is a lot of work that they've done, and I feel like it's really easy to kind of overlook it and not think about it and just kind of take it for granted, but this kind of stuff that just makes it a pleasure to program for a platform, you know, or with a framework. Like, this is why you might choose that. There is a command here in Solid. It's called Solid Hardware 5. And if you just type that in, then you get some help menu sort of, and you get things like Solid Hardware space list, and that lists the hardware available on the system. Whether or not that's useful in the same way that like LSPCI is useful, or just looking in /dev yourself, I guess it kind of depends on what you're after and what you're trying to accomplish. I can't really think of necessarily a use case for that myself, but maybe that's just, you know, I'm not being imaginative enough. Okay, next up is Sonnet, S-O-N-N-E-T. It's a multi-language spell checker. It's a plugin-based spell checking library for Qt applications. It supports several different plugins, including HSpell, Enchant, Aspell, and Hunspell. It also supports automated language detection based on a combination of different algorithms. So primarily this is a development library, so if you're a programmer creating something with the Qt frameworks, you would probably, or you might use this to add essentially spell checking to your application, which can be quite useful, obviously. It's pretty easy to add as well. It's basically a spell check decorator. That's the name of the class that you add to your code. So let's assume you're using QtextEdit, which is the Qt text field library. So if you're creating a Qtext edit object, let's call it text edit. You create that, and then you do sonnet colon colon spell check decorator asterisk decorator equals new sonnet colon colon spell check decorator parentheses the thing that you've just created. So for instance, text edit close parentheses semicolon. That's just an example straight off of the Git repo, but relatively simple. In other words, to just add that to your cute little text edit box, and then when people write stuff, Sonnet can detect the language, ideally, and spell check it based on that. How does it detect the language? Well, I don't exactly know, but there are things called trigrams, apparently, and it's essentially an analysis of the frequency of combinations of three letters, or I should say three characters, because there were some spaces in the trigram that I generated. So it detects, I guess, I'm imagining common things in, you know, specific languages, or rather it detects common trigrams in some corpus of work. And then I'm imagining that it uses those trigrams to calculate the likelihood of the thing someone is typing to be the same language as this set of trigrams. That's what I'm imagining is probably a lot more complex than that. There are, though, two commands included with Sonnet that you probably won't use as a user, but as a developer to essentially train the or to analyze and provide statistics for Sonnet. You could use gen trigrams and parse trigrams. Gen trigrams requires a text file full of some, preferably some consistent language, and then an output file. So for instance, gen trigrams, example.txt space output.trigram. Now, if you look at output.trigram with most, see, I didn't forget, I don't have less. Here's a bunch of things. So there's, I'll skip down to the bottom. 299 instances of /sy. This is a technical article, so I'm assuming that's indicative of that. Let's see what else. And only had a, the word and essentially only is detected 15 times. That doesn't make sense. I don't believe it. Maybe. How many words is in here? Word count in, I don't know what article I used. Here it is. There we go. Dash W. 1,157. I can't believe the word, the triplet, the trigram AND only happened 15 times. Anyway, it generates trigrams, and then you can parse trigrams as well. Parse trigrams, output.trigram, and I have no idea what it does with what it just, I just parsed it. It did nothing, no error, but also nothing obvious for me to latch on to think, oh, okay, well, that's what's happening to that information. I have no clue what happens to that information. I don't know what parse trigram does, and it doesn't really give you a whole lot of hint. It doesn't really tell you what it's for. But those are the two executables in the Sonnet package, and the rest of them are just include files, header files, things like that for developers. Next up is Spectacle. Spectacle is a great little application, really, honestly. It's very cool. It's a screen capture application. I mean, it isn't that big of a deal. And yet every time I sit in front of a computer that's not Linux, which isn't often admittedly, but you know, the couple of times I do, people ask me like how to take a screenshot. It's like they don't know. It's like something that people, I guess, don't do that often, which puzzles me because I feel like I'm always taking screenshots. Always. I don't know why. I'm just always taking screenshots of something. So I've always been that way. I've always been I've always known the quickest way to produce a screenshot on my computer. That's just one of those things that, you know, some people, the first thing they learn is to change the wallpaper. And one of the first things I learn is screenshot. It just seems like, I don't know, a thing that's useful. Maybe it's because I'm providing support to a lot of people and I need to take screenshots of things, or yeah, I'm not sure. But Spectacle is a great little screen shooter, and you can call it up by going to the K menu and going to Spectacle, or on a lot of keyboards, if you have a print screen key, you can just hit that and that brings up Spectacle. And Spectacle is kind of a full featured, I mean, it's one of the fuller featured screenshot applications that I've, you know, compared to others. I mean, some it's you press a button, a screenshot is saved to some standard location on your hard drive. Maybe it's pictures, maybe it's just in your home folder, maybe it's in downloads, you don't really know, maybe it's on your desktop, you're not sure. But that's where it goes, and it gets a standard name, and that's it. I mean, that's your interaction. If you want to crop that picture down, then you get to open it in some photo editing graphic editor, and you can crop it there or whatever. So that's not how Spectacle works. Spectacle, I mean, it can do that. The minute you launch it, it takes a screenshot. That's its default behavior, is that it takes a screenshot when it is invoked, which is a very useful thing. But then it opens a window with that screenshot visible. And at that point, you can choose what to do with that screenshot, or you know, you can take a new screenshot. And there are different capture modes. There's a capture mode for the full screen, for a rectangular region of your choosing, an active window, or only the window under the cursor. I tend not to use either of those, the active or the window under your cursor, because what I have often found is that it basically gives you some dead space around the window to account for the drop shadow. I never want the drop shadow. I mean, you know, I say that, and then I'm sure one of these days I'm going to think, I really wanted that drop shadow, and I'm going to be happy about it. But yeah, I usually use either the full screen or the rectangular region, and probably most often the rectangular region. You can delay the screenshot. The screenshot that you're about to take, you can delay it by any number of seconds, or you can say, don't take the screenshot until I click. You can include the mouse pointer in your screenshot, or you can turn that off so that there's no mouse pointer. You can include window title bar and borders, or not. You can capture the current pop-up only, or not. You can quit after a manual save or copy, and then you can trigger a new screenshot. Now, in addition to that, there are lots of things you can do with, you know, around your screenshot. So, for instance, you got a screenshot. What do you want to do with it? Do you want to save? Save as? Do you want to copy it to your clipboard and then just have that in your clipboard for a while and wander off and paste it somewhere? Do you want to export it to a certain application? I can export to a share function, which is the KIO thing. So I can send it to a device. I can send it to a Google Drive, which I wouldn't want to do, but I mean, I could if I had to. Send it over Bluetooth, send it through email, or post to IMGUR or IMGUR or whatever, IMGUR. And then there are yet more online services, because I must have some plugin turned on in Dolphin. I can export to remote storage, export to KML, export to JAlbum, and it just goes on and on like that. And then there's, I could open it in GwenView, in Geeky, in XPaint, in GIMP, Color Paint, Ocular. It just goes on and on, and it's great because, I mean, there are so many times where I just want to take a screenshot and then go straight over to GIMP to, I don't know, paint an arrow on the thing or something like that. There are also extra tools, so you can, yes, you can record your screen. So maybe you don't want to do just a screenshot, you want to do a screen, like a screen recording, you want to video record the screen. Well, you have access to that here. Not necessarily, I mean, you may or may not have something installed for that to happen. I use Simple Screen Recorder, and that seems to work really well, and Spectacle detects that that's a thing that I have. It also does let me know that there are others I could use that I don't have installed or that it can't find installed. And it offers to let me go visit those home pages and so on. So that's kind of cool. I can print straight from the tool menu. I could open a default screenshot folder straight from the tool menu. And then there's a configure button so that I can set things like, how does it behave when it is first launched? Does it take a full screenshot, or does it just go to whatever capture mode I used last. What's the, do I want it just to save the screenshot, like the simple ones that I was describing before, or not? What happens when I'm doing a rectangular region? How does it present the rest of the screen around the region that I'm selecting, and so on? I mean, it's an amazing, amazing screenshot application. Honestly, I love it. And once you, when you are ready to save your screenshot, you can save it as any of the popular formats. It'll convert it to that. I don't know what it starts out as. Presumably, probably like a TIFF or something highly uncompressed, and you can save it as a .jpeg, a .png, WebP, and it's so nice because it just converts it. I mean, I can't tell you how many times on other like on GNOME, when I take a screenshot, if I want it in some other format other than, I think, PNG is what it does, then I have to just convert it myself. I just convert blah to blah.webp. You know, it's just that extra step, and Spectacle makes sure that you have it all right there, available, easy, all in one go. Definitely one of those things that I appreciate more and more the more I think about it. Another thing I appreciate more and more the more I think about is coffee, and it is time for a coffee break. So let's go take a coffee break. We'll come back, finish up the show. Okay, I'm back, and I've got my coffee. I actually just took a drink of it, but you don't know that because I cut out the sound of me slurping and sipping. I guess you don't really slurp coffee so much as you sip coffee. Anyway, it was good. Hopefully you're enjoying your cup of coffee as well. Now, what we need to talk about is listener feedback, because I got some listener feedback about I guess it must have been episode 507, or was it 506, wherein I was musing about what I called during that episode, and what I'll continue to call, for lack of a better term, is sort of the namespace of common commands. And I got one feedback from Deep Geek, and then one from Vulcan Writer, and both of them have a lot of interesting things to say, as usual. And here we go. So Deep Geek says, I was listening to last week's show where you once again editorialized on having a namespace on for common command line commands with a way of choosing a backend to supply it. It occurred to me to write you to let you know about the Debian alternative system. When I wondered if it was available on non-Debian systems, up popped an answer in my search query, and there's an alternative version of alternative re-implemented by Red Hat. So it's actually it's a widespread system at this point. He says, I do agree with many of your editorial points, like having a common file dialog, which oddly enough is provided to Flatpaks through a system called portals. So I've established that you know about the alternative system. Why don't we just implement it there? Am I missing something? If you were, for some strange inspiration, to supply a package of either bash aliases or alternative system aliases, I would be one to try such a thing. So that's probably the most obvious answer, and it's funny that I didn't think about that, because I have implemented such a thing in a way for, coincidentally, Flatpaks. Flatpaks, as you may or may not know, depending on whether you use them, have this supremely annoying thing, and there is a bug about it, and the developers of Flatpak are simply not budging. And the thing, I've mentioned this before, I know I have, so I'll just say it quickly. You can't just launch a Flatpak. Like, you can't just, for instance, if you've installed GIMP on Flatpak, then you type in GIMP. Oh, apparently I'm not running GIMP as a Flatpak because it just launched. So if you installed Krita? No, Krita's not. I don't know what Flatpaks I have on my Handbrake. Let's take Handbrake. Handbrake is a great little application. I have it installed as Flatpak, even though I maintain the Slack build for it. It's why I go to the trouble. It's just, why not? Flatpak, it's right there. So Handbrake, okay. So if I try to launch Handbrake, command not found. Well, what about Handbrake with a capital H? No. Okay, what about Handbrake with a capital B? No. Okay. Oh, it's a Flatpak, right? Okay. So Flatpak, what is it? Run? And then Handbrake. What's Handbrake's website? I don't know, actually, because I never go to Handbrake's website. So I'll type in Handbrake. Okay, oh, it looks like it's handbrake.fr. Okay, cool. So Flatpak run fr.handbrake. I guess Handbrake, probably, right? Nope. Oh, it's probably capital H. Handbrake. So fr.handbrake, capital H, Handbrake. No. Okay. Capital H, capital B. So fr.handbrake.handbrake. Still no. You'll never get it. You'll never get it unless you realize that the command for Handbrake is ghb, like gtk Handbrake, ghb. If you type that in, then Flatpak can find the executable for Handbrake and actually launch the stupid application. It's really annoying. It's profoundly frustrating. I don't know why it's a thing. So what I did was I made two different applications, actually. One called Fuzzpak and one called Packrat. And I think it's Patrack. Yeah, Packrat does. It's like an alternative command. You tell it, okay, Packrat add dash dash command quote Flatpak run fr.handbrake.ghb close quote, and then the thing that you want to make the alias for it. So then I would just type in Handbrake, because that's what I want to type in to launch Handbrake. Hit return. That adds to your, I imagine it must be your bash rc file. I don't really remember. I wrote the stupid thing, but I don't remember. And then from then on, once you've added that to your thing, it tells you, okay, so run this thing. Yeah, it is. So it's added to a file called flatpak underscore aliases in your .bashrc.d file. And so then you source that file, of course, to make it go again. And now if I just type in Handbrake, the Flatpak actually launches. It's a really, really nice system, if I do say so myself. It totally works. Is it needlessly... And of course you can do things like packrat list, and it tells you, oh, you've got one set up for Synfig and one for Handbrake. Cool, great. Is it over complex? Do you need it? Couldn't you just do this manually? Well, of course you can. But sometimes, you know, it's nice to just have that right there in your terminal. You can just type in the thing. So it's a really simple little application. I just did it because I was tired of opening up Flatpak aliases, I guess. I don't know. But I made that, and it's nice. And you can remove the aliases as well, or list the ones that you have aliased. So it is, there are some convenience functions there, in other words. So that was the direct, I was blatantly ripping off alternatives. So that would work, is what I'm trying to say. Like, that would 100% work. That's the answer, right? That's the personal, local answer for, I want ifconfig to always be ifconfig. Even if a command called IP comes out for ifconfig, I want it I want to type in ifconfig. Now, the time that starts to break down a little bit is in the case of something like netstat, where yes, the quote unquote new, the replacement is netstat-r is mapped to IP route, and netstat-i is mapped to IP-s link, and netstat-g is IP MADDR, and netstat in general is mapped to SS. That's the point, right? So you couldn't really say, I just want to swap out netstat. I still want to type netstat for SS. Well, that's fine until you need actual netstat, or no, rather, until you need netstat-i to actually map not to SS, but to IP-s link. Then that starts to break down a little bit, and I think that's the problem. So yeah, it's a lead. That's definitely the right direction, I think. Now, Vulcan Rider emailed me and said that that he's going to, okay, so actually I'm going to probably be the old, this is Vulcan Rider. Actually, I'm going to probably be the old grumpy curmudgeon graybeard sysadmin, but I wanted to comment on changing the names of commands in Linux. So I'm going to, this is Klaatu now. I'll interrupt here and say that that's not, I'm not sure that Vulcan Rider meant that that's what I was saying, but that is not what I was saying. I'm saying that I understand that commands have to evolve, and you know, sometimes they take those old commands and just tack dash ng, like new, next generation or new generation, whatever ng is supposed to stand for, and then you have like that command except dash ng at the end, which, I mean, that's a way of doing it as well, right? But what I'm saying is that let's not change the names of the commands and yet still let them evolve. So I just wanted to make that clear, because I do feel like I got off on a little bit of a tangent later on in that episode when I was talking about things like GNU install being a thing that is occupying a useful namespace right now, and how I would like to change that. But maybe that's what he's responding to. Either way, he says, a big part of the problem is that Linux wants to straddle a line. On one hand, they want to claim that they are Unix-like and all that that entails, but on the other hand, you have people coming along saying, this is a broken concept, I will fix it for you. And then, just Klaatu again, so to summarize, the conflict here is that some people don't think it was broken in the first place. And in a separate email, he goes on to say, where is it? He goes on to say that, yeah, here we go. So I was saying in my response, for instance, another example is typing IP or ifconfig. The output is basically the same, for better or for worse. So they're different binaries producing the same result. He says, as long as they alias ifconfig to IP, well, okay. But honestly, then someone will come along later and make the old command go away from the new and shiny is better, even if it isn't, crowd, which is what happened to ifconfig. They made it go away until someone built a package to replace ifconfig. This is Klaatu again now. I don't know. I mean, I do feel like there's a certain level of suspicion here, as if though, like, some group of people is trying to change things just because they want to change it and make old commands go away. And I don't know that I feel that deep fear myself. I maybe I'm being naive, but for me, I don't know. I'm assuming, I'm taking everyone sort of more or less at their word and assuming that when commands are declared old, there was some reason for it. Like, there was some lack of functionality, and I could be wrong about that. Or even if it's just, maybe it has all the functionality, but looking at the code just doesn't, it's not easy to maintain. Or realistically, maybe the code is just, it's not written in a language that you're finding enough contributors for. There are lots of reasons a command might be considered sort of like old and deprecated. In fact, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say I probably would think, and I could be wrong, that most people would leave a command alone if it was working fine. Why re-implement it? Maybe people would, like Vulcan Rider says, like maybe there is a contingency of people who are just like, well, it just needs to be new, just needs to be different, and that's better than what it was before. But I tend to imagine that most people will be fine with what they're given, unless when they look at the code, they just can't make heads or tails of it. And that's sometimes, I think, maybe when you re-implement. Maybe I'm being naive, because, I mean, I know there is sort of a tendency, especially within, I don't know, the technical crowd, like, you know, the not invented here syndrome. And maybe it's just a question of, well, I see how this thing works, I could go in and try to change it, but I'd rather just write it from scratch myself. Could be a thing. Absolutely could be a thing. I don't know. I don't know enough about it. And when I say I don't know enough about it, I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff going on there, and I don't know that any of us can know enough about it to know the real motivations behind it all. But I guess, I mean, in general, I'm going to just take people at their word. I mean, if for some reason ifconfig was found deficient and IP is working better, then I'm going to assume that that's the case. If netstat, even the man page says netstat is an obsolete command, is mostly obsolete. So, I mean, I don't know who's saying that. I don't know what voice I'm reading that in, but it's in a 2014 man page written by someone. And I'm going to assume that that's, you know, someone throwing in the towel saying, hey, I don't know. I'm not going to maintain this command anymore. So, someone else should do something with it, or else someone should make something else to do the same job. There's a bunch of different authors listed in this man page, but it doesn't say who sort of declared the obsolescence of the command of netstat. It's definitely complex, though. And I think it would probably go down easier if, as I was saying, and I think actually as we're all saying, I think everyone in this conversation, Vulcan Rider, Deep Geek, and me, are essentially sort of saying the same thing, and that is that there's a certain set of commands that are sort of like system level commands that have either been around long enough to just sort of they become the de facto way of doing a thing, or they really are. I mean, they really are just a system level command, like I guess that's the same thing, just from the beginning of Unix. I did look up ifconfig out of curiosity. It was not in my Unix 1982 manual, so that was just an interesting thing to find out, because I'd assumed it had been there longer, but it wasn't back in 1982, apparently. At least in this one, you know, I think it's a BSD 4. Something or another manual, something like that. Anyway, the Vulcan Rider says, I have never used or tried to use or was even aware of the install command. I think package managers are fine. I would rather do that than have some universal package format or command. If I'm honest, a lot of this probably came from the commercial Unixes, which all had their own different methods of doing things like installing software. For instance, installing software on SunOS, Solaris, AIX, HPUX, OSF-1, never even heard of that one, were all radically different because each Unix from each company had to be unique or invite lawsuits from other companies. I mean, if you want to take it back to the basics, .config /make install, and even that is more modern than configuring and compiling by hand. Ouch. So this is me, Kawatu, again. So yeah, there's a bunch of, there's a lot of thoughts about this is how I'm going to summarize it. And I think generally, I think most people would be more or less in favor of having quote-unquote standard commands, but there are exceptions to even those who seem to be agreeing for one reason or another. And that's that's why we are where we are now. I mean, and I am not saying that we are in a very bad place. I am just saying it would be nice if we just had some standard commands. And as I pointed out in episode 506, there are standard commands. I mean, there is a POSIX specification. Maybe that just needs to be broadened a little bit. I don't know. But there are things where, you know, like sed and grep and awk and things like that. I mean, there are, I don't know about awk, but I mean, definitely sed and grep, I think, and tar. You know, there's just certain flags and options that are meant to be in your version of that application, and they should do this thing. And as long as you have that, then fine, we can alias it to just sed. We don't have to worry about whether it's gsed or some other sed. We don't have to worry about, yeah, awk, actually. We don't have to worry about if it's nawk or gawk or something else. What's the other one? I don't know. But, you know, there's a lot of different sort of implementations of the same thing. And if you think about it like programming, it is basically the same concept. If you have two programmers, one's working on the front end and one's working on the back end, maybe, they obviously need to have coordination between themselves. Someone, they need to know, what kind of input are you going to give me so that I can put it into this function? And what kind of output do you need from me so that my function is useful to you? That's the same sort of thing that I would like to see us going towards in the Linuxes and Unixes of the world. I know there's not really many Linuxes because there's just one Linux kernel, but you know what I mean. So the Linux and the Unix, the POSIX world, I think just understanding that the input and the output standardization would be convenient, I think, for everyone. And then as a separate point, I think that some command names that are intuitive, like ifconfig, I don't know that that's necessarily intuitive. I don't know that IP is necessarily intuitive either, because TCP IP, I mean, the IP command doesn't really, I mean, you're not like configuring, you know, I mean, I guess you are, but I don't know. I don't think that that's super intuitive. I don't know what the intuitive version of those things would be. Maybe network. Maybe that would be the thing, you know, like help me with my network stuff. I don't know. I don't know what that would be. But there are some commands that are intuitive, such as help and install and other things like that. I think those kinds of commands, those command names ought to be reserved for doing the thing that they appear to do. I think that would be a huge improvement. So again, those are two separate thoughts. One thought was, and I should never mixed these thoughts in the same episode. One thought was, hey, it would be nice if the command names just stayed the same somehow, even if the backend changed. That's the if configs of the world, the netstats of the world. Let's just keep those and swap them out with IP and SS as needed, but no one will ever have to ever know that IP and SS exist. Second thought was, there are some commands out there with really super obvious names that I think 99% of the people that you ask, what does that command do? They would have a certain notion of what that would be. Or if you told someone, hey, do a thing, guess the command, this is what they would say. So what do you do if you're staring at a terminal? Well, I would type in help, because I'd just be like, give me some guidance. I don't know what to do with this black screen, green text. What do I do? Help. Well, as you know, probably, dear listener, help command is not helpful at all. It just lists built-in commands of the bash shell that you're running in that moment. No guidance whatsoever, really. It's just, it's pretty useless. Not what, I shouldn't say useless. It's just what people who would desperately type help into a terminal, that would not be useful to them. And then, I mean, I would much rather alias the word help to some info page about how to use maybe bash or something like that. Install, obviously, I've talked about that. Like, what does that do? Well, it doesn't install stuff. I mean, it does, but not really, right? Like, if you told someone, hey, I'm going to give you a terminal and I want you to figure out how to install Firefox, they're not going to, one of the things, first they're going to type help. Finding nothing better than that, they'll think, well, maybe if I just type in install space Firefox? Like, on my dream POSIX system, that thought process would result in a working version of Firefox. That would be it. That would be the way that you would do it. You'd say help, and then ideally it would actually tell you useful information. And failing that, then you would just guess, install Firefox. And that would do it. That would be like a DNF install Firefox or whatever. So anyway, those are my two thoughts. One, old reliable names, keep them. Two, useful names, use them. And that's it. I think that's everything for this episode. Thanks for the feedback, everybody. These are interesting. I really enjoy sort of theory crafting about how computers could be different or better or different and better. Because I think it's a useful, like if you don't consider all angles, then you're not going to hit upon the best angle. And, you know, I think within certainly computing and sort of the, well, because computers are so ubiquitous today, I do feel like everyone has their own preference at this point. Like everyone's got an opinion, and not everyone, but some people have opinions about how they should be. And so it gets harder and harder, I think, to find a point that everyone agrees on. But I think that's the pleasure of really looking at it from all the different angles, because you see the complexity, you see the different requirements or the different preferences. And I just, as someone who likes to tinker on those sorts of things, it's an eternal desire to make everyone's preference somehow be compatible, you know, even when sometimes it's just like completely not compatible. Like, no, I do not want you to change the install command. Like, the install command is what I use to generate, to copy a file to a path and make and create the leading directories up to that path all in one command. It's super convenient. Never change it. I would rather have install personally be doing something useful to all users, not just to like the person who scripts and installs a file and the directory path all in one go. I think those people could live with INST instead of install, I'll bet. But normal users who just want to type out words, install, that should be theirs. That we should give them that command. But somehow I would like for all of these things to work together and to make the Uber POSIX. But not today, but someday, maybe. We'll keep trying. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.